This Janet Mefford Today podcast is sponsored by Heart for Lebanon, the Christian ministry working among 2 million Syrian refugee families who've been displaced. For just $29 a month, you can help Heart for Lebanon reach out in Jesus' name to a family of six, providing them with food, Christian education, survival essentials, and the gospel. Please call now, 888-247-5499. That's 888-247-5499 or janetmefford.com.
This is Janet Mefford Today.
Our confidence is in Christ alone.
Are we going to stand with God, come what may?
If the Word of God says it, I believe it.
And that's the way it is.
And now, here is Janet Mefford.
Thank you so much for joining us. Remember California's Assembly Bill 2943? That was the legislation that would have banned all fee-based practices aimed at helping people with unwanted same-sex attraction or behavior or gender confusion and call it an unlawful business practice. Well, you'll recall that pushback on AB 2943 led to the homosexual assembly member Evan Lowe to withdraw the measure, but it's not yet time to breathe a sigh of relief. And that's because California is just employing a new approach to this issue, and family and Christian leaders and therapists say this approach will end up at the same bad place. What am I talking about? Well, the latest is that the California Senate has now passed Assembly Concurrent Resolution 99, or ACR 99. This condemns counseling for unwanted same-sex attraction or gender confusion and tells pastors that they need to embrace the LGBTQ narrative. This is bad enough, but as CBN News has pointed out, equally problematic is the way that ACR 99 proclaims that groups in society, including therapists and religious groups, have caused disproportionately high rates of suicide, attempted suicide, depression, rejection, and isolation amongst LGBTQ and questioning individuals. But is that even true? Well, my next guest says research simply does not support that claim. And we're going to talk about it today with Dr. Laura Haynes. She is a California psychologist who is retired from clinical practice with more than 40 years experience. She has testified at the legislative committee hearing level in several states, representing groups like the National Task Force for Therapy Equality, and has written a great piece about this over at the Public Discourse, asking the question, are religious Californians really harming the mental health of people who identify as LGBTQ? Laura, it's so good to have you with us. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Jan. I appreciate the opportunity to talk about this subject with everyone, share the message.
Oh, absolutely. Would you talk a little bit first about your take on ACR 99 as somebody who deals so often with this issue? What do you make of California lawmakers passing this kind of resolution?
Well, I was very much involved in that campaign against AB 2943 in California, and we were very happy that it failed. This resolution is non-binding. But we now have the people who claim that they so fervently believe in separation of religion, state and religion, that they are now having a state-approved religious beliefs and practices position.
Right.
So that we don't want that, and they're trying to use this to influence religious pastors, the clergy, and therapists, and the public. They're trying to use it to influence what the public believes and get everybody on board with a liberal position on sexuality and gender.
Right, exactly. And it seems to be born out of a lot of personal animus. When you look at Evan Lowe, the LGBTQ caucus, it seems very, very personal for them that they have this narrative. Christians and other pro-family Americans are harming them, and they've caused all of this harm to the LGBTQ society. But I have yet to see really a lot of hard evidence that proves that point. What is the truth about what research shows as far as their claim that religious groups are disproportionately harming and causing suicide rates in the LGBT community?
Well, when I testified in July against AB 493, which is the pair that goes with ACR 99, in that it is pushing the LGBTQ agenda in schools, anti-religious beliefs in schools, with the idea that this will help the health of minors who identify as LGBTQ. And when I was testifying on that, I discovered the law itself included a study called the Gleason 2017 Survey of School Environment. And this study was supposed to prove that the LGBT approach is necessary. I looked it over, and I discovered that what it actually found, when you go down to the actual data in Appendix 2, you can see it, it actually found that religious schools that lacked the LGBTQ affirmative policies being pushed ranked among the safest for LGBTQ minority students, with the lowest LGBTQ bullying or victimization, better than private non-religious schools that had all the LGBTQ affirmative procedures.
Wow.
So it really isn't necessary.
Well, that's interesting. And I know you talk in your piece at the Public Discourse about the rates of bullying being lower than those of the private non-religious schools that used all of this suggested material from the Gay, Lesbian, Straight Education Network, as you mentioned. So this actually shows evidence from their own activists that religious schools seem to be treating them better than the public schools treat them.
At least as well, if not better.
Yeah, that's amazing. But and then you point out on the flip side, religious teachers and students are experiencing harm in the schools where this propaganda is put out. What is going on?
Exactly. So, of course, the teachers here were trembling and because this does not create a welcoming school for all, as they're claiming. It simply creates a conflict between religious people, teachers of many religions in California, and those who follow the LGBTQ activist perspective. So it's actually creating schools that are a situation that's unnecessary, it's unwelcoming, it's unjustified, and furthermore, it's unworkable because teachers of these many religious faiths cannot implement these policies, anti-religious policies, so the approach cannot work, and it's unconstitutional because if the state does try to enforce, so far this law, if the state tries to enforce teachers actually teaching beliefs they don't hold or using pronouns that are against their beliefs, this will definitely lead to lawsuits, and it bullies the teachers. We think the California legislators got our arguments that this will lead to lawsuits because they gutted the bill of the coercive requirement for LGBTQ teacher training, and they changed it just to recommending anti-religious training be given repeatedly.
Interesting.
The real solution is to teach an anti-bullying policy for all, implement train teachers in it so they can implement effectively. Everyone could celebrate that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the point that a lot of us have been making for a long time. Nobody wants to see any child bullied for any reason. And why can't you just deal with it on an even-keeled level without bringing gay activists into the picture? But again, isn't that part of the problem here, Laura, that you have gay activism driving this entire thing?
Yes, we do. And, you know, I don't think that all people who have LGBTQ experiences necessarily agree with this kind of conflict that's being set up so harshly.
Right.
But I think that this is militant, radical activists who are doing this.
Right. So ACR 99, as you pointed out, is non-binding. But I have talked to some other people in California who believe this is just a halfway point to move back to a binding sort of piece of legislation like AB 2943. But this time they've collected some religious supporters along the way. Do you see it that way, Laura, that that's where they're headed?
Well, it could be. They're claiming that they've collected some evangelical pastors or pastors of traditional religious faiths who are supporting them, but we haven't seen many names of anybody like that to back it up. But they, you know, would like to make the claim, and then maybe they'll come back and try to pass a law and use that as an argument to try to get it through this time. But we are seeing considerable pushback. You know, during the time that AB 4923 was going through, the U.S. Supreme Court passed NIFLA versus Becerra,
yes,
which said that professional speech has the same First Amendment rights as any other speech, and it effectively abrogated previous decisions of some state Supreme Courts that had said you can ban therapy and you can censor professional speech. That happened while this is going through, and we've seen evidence and seen that he's actually expressed to his some of his constituents, that he was concerned that that law might be found unconstitutional. And now the same thing is coming up in the New York City ban.
Yeah, Laura, hang on just a moment because we do need to pause and go to a quick break here on Janet Mefford Today. We're going to come right back, though, with Dr. Laura Haynes. Stay with us. We'll return right after this. There's been a leftist takeover within conservative Christianity. Ungodly socialist ideas are coming to prominence. Ideas like social justice, critical race theory, and cultural Marxism. And leading figures within mainstream evangelicalism are showing themselves to be untrustworthy as shepherds and guardians of the truth. If you're a Christian who wants to know what to do about this serious shift away from biblical truth, then I invite you to join me at the upcoming Stand Against Marxism conference, taking place October 18th and 19th. In Des Moines, Iowa. Hosted by the Enemies Within the Church Project, the Stand Against Marxism conference will inform you about this dangerous infiltration of postmodern thought, connect you with other concerned Christians, and teach you how to defend biblical Christianity in your own church. Register now for the Stand Against Marxism conference, October 18th and 19th in Des Moines, Iowa. For more information, you can visit standagainstmarxism.com. That's standagainstmarxism.com. See you there. Hi, this is Janet Mefford. Let me tell you about Gofran and Khalid. They're refugee brothers who were orphaned during the Syrian war, and now they live in a tent in a farmer's field in Lebanon. It's a sad situation. But every other week when Heart for Lebanon's Hope on Wheels educational fun truck shows up, they're usually right on the front row singing worship songs and reciting Bible verses. In the middle of despair, Gofran and Khalid are finding hope in Jesus. But this only happens as you give. $29 a month will help bring Christian education, food, and survival essentials to boys like this and their families. Call 888-247-5499. That's 888-247-5499. Or there's a banner to click at janetmefford.com. For just 98 cents a day, you can help a refugee family of six for an entire year through the great work that Heart for Lebanon does every single day. Please call now. 888-247-5499. 888-247-5499 or janetmefford.com. We are back on Janet Mefford Today. Glad you're here and glad to be joined by Dr. Laura Haynes. She is a licensed California psychologist, retired from clinical practice with more than 40 years experience, and she has testified at legislative committee hearings in several states representing groups like the International Federation for Therapeutic and Counseling Choice. And we are talking about this ACR 99 that the California Senate just passed. This is yet again an attempt by these California lawmakers to try to put pressure on the church and pressure on freedom-loving Americans to say you have to subscribe to the LGBT narrative on counseling and whether or not people can change. And Laura Haynes has written a wonderful article at the Public Discourse, really refuting some of these claims that religious groups and therapists are disproportionately harming the LGBTQ community's mental health. You know, Laura, before we went to the break, you brought up a really great point because we were talking a little bit about AB 2943, which was scuttled at the last minute. And a lot of people were surprised by that. But you rightly pointed out the Supreme Court ruled in NIFLA v. Becerra that you couldn't have California forcing pro-life pregnancy centers to engage in compelled speech, and that perhaps Evan Lowe was a little spooked by that and recognized that AB 2943 might be unconstitutional. So now we have ACR 99, but how much of an effect do you think ACR 99 will have?
It's hard to say. I think what they're going for now, I think they're kind of seeing that it's dangerous to try to have therapy bans, and because they may be overturned at the Supreme Court and give people of a religious faith more freedom than ever. So yeah, I think they're going after changing the culture primarily now. I think that's their focus, but that doesn't mean they couldn't try to come back and come up with some new form of a therapy ban that they think might have a chance of succeeding. But I think their primary goal is to change what every person on the face of the earth actually believes about sexual orientation and gender identity, and they're attacking religions, religious faith. They want to discredit our traditional religious faith And, you know, that's the most serious thing, is if people leave their faith, that's, you know, that's our primary concern here. I mean, that's the bottom line.
Yeah.
And also, they're taking away hope from people who have LGBTQ experiences and don't want them.
Right. Oh, there's so much to unpack here. And you talk about, for example, when you're going through in your article, the evidence that, you know, research does not back up this claim that religious groups are disproportionately harming the LGBTQ community. We have to have so many letters in that acronym. I keep tripping on the Q because it's yet another letter we have to add in there. But you talk about the fact that there's research assessing the well-being of LGBTQ adults who belong to traditional religions. And they actually concluded that evangelical Protestants weren't any less happy. These are LGBT adults than mainline Protestants, where same-sex relations are fully normalized and accepted. So that seems to fly in the face of this claim by ACR 99 as well.
It doesn't square with their narrative that people of many religions are causing those who have LGBTQ experiences to have mental health problems. So this study by Berenger and Gay, 2017, was a nationally representative study. It used Pew Research data from 2013, which was before Obergefell. So they found that, yes, that Protestants who had traditional faith and beliefs about sexuality were no less happy than those who had liberal views about sexuality. And then there's Cranny, 2017. This is a population-based study. So we're talking about two reputable, rigorous, competent studies here. Cranny did a population-based study and found that people of a conservative faith, who he was studying Mormons in that case, but those of conservative faith and who followed their faith were no less happy, mentally healthy, satisfied with life, and flourishing than those who did not follow their faith or who had no faith. And in addition to those studies, we have research from a new remarkable research team composed of gay-affirming and change-affirming researchers working together. So it's really hard to say their findings are biased.
Yeah.
And what they found, again, the same thing, that... And they also happen to have access to a Mormon data set. And they found that, again, those who follow their faith, their religious, traditional religious faith, again, no less happy, mentally healthy, flourishing, satisfied than those who don't. And they also did research showing that, looking at relationship options, and they found that those who live according in relationship options that are consistent with their faith can find satisfaction that is real.
Interesting.
It doesn't square with the narrative that people of many traditional religions are causing people with LGBTQ experiences mental illness.
That's
important.
In fact,
what it really says is that religion is correlated with happiness, not depression.
That's absolutely opposite of what they would have us believe. The other thing that I really stood out to me in your article, Laura, is you cited this APA, the American Psychological Association Task Force report from 2009. It found that change-allowing therapists have not used methods that just try to shape or condition behavior since the late 70s. This is another narrative they're always throwing out there. Oh, I was electric shocked and, you know, I had all these horrible things happen to me. And I've talked to some of the other people who have testified at these hearings, people like David Pickup, who've said, we go and ask them after the fact, who was this therapist who was harming you in this way? We'd love to join you in trying to get this guy's license taken away. And somehow they disappear. All of a sudden, they don't have a name to give, which is very convenient.
Well, I have testified against these therapy bans in several states, and I have never ceased to be amazed to learn the things that I do and have done in therapy that I had no idea I did.
I'll bet.
So creative. But not only did the APA Task Force report of 2009 say these methods haven't been used in 40 to 50 years, one of the, an attorney who writes therapy ban bills in Utah and who's won the Equality Award from Human Rights Campaign, very staunch, I mean, very strongly LGBTQ affirmative political group.
Right.
He won their award. He testified before a legislative hearing in Utah that these things have not been done in 40 to 50 years.
He's got an award from the HRC, and he's even agreeing with us. That's incredible.
That's right. So if these things have actually occurred by some fringe person somewhere, somehow, that we never meet them or hear about them, and I've been in the National Professional Association for Therapists who do this kind of work. We don't know anybody who does it. I've talked to people in faith-based ministries, and they tell me they don't get stories from people who come to them that it's happened. But if there is something that's happened in a fringe person somewhere, somehow, what we know for certain is ethical change-allowing therapists and ethical faith-based ministries don't do that.
Exactly. Yep, that's the point. That's the lie that has to be corrected, because that's the lie that has spread around the world while the truth is still putting its shoes on, as it were. I mean, this is it's terrible. And you also point out the APA has not declared that change-allowing therapy is unethical. In other words, when you have a client come into your office who says, I was sexually abused, now I'm having same-sex attraction and I don't want it, can you please help me? And you have a therapist who says, yes, I'll help you meet your therapy goals. The APA has not said that's unethical. So what right does California have to take it away?
Well, the APA Task Force report reviewed research. This was an all LGBT group that was doing the review, and they were trying to, well, they were looking for evidence that the therapy is harmful. They couldn't, they said they found no study that meets scientific standards shows change-allowing therapy is harmful. So they went to a small number of studies they had that had some anecdotal evidence that they used to base their conclusion, which they said was tentative. Now, there's a century of research by comparison that shows people changed. They should at minimum have included that research as anecdotal evidence and given it at a minimum equal weight.
Yeah.
So, there is no reason to be banning this therapy. I would like to add that the APA Handbook of Sexuality and Psychology in 2014 said that their sexual orientation and gender identity are not simply biologically determined. And I know of no professional organization that says they are simply biologically determined. The handbook also said that there are psychoanalytic causes of same-sex attraction. What that means in layman's terms is there are family relationships as the child experienced them that influence sexual orientation. And also there was some evidence of family influence on gender identity development, but we know a lot less and have a lot less that helps us know about gender identity in general. But the handbook also said there are associative and potentially causal links between childhood sexual abuse and having same-sex partners. It based that, for some people, conclusion on research that included a 30-year study of documented cases of childhood sexual abuse.
Wow.
So if you affirm the sexual, the LGBTQ feelings of a child or an adult whose feelings were caused by childhood sexual abuse, that's harmful. And it means that if you don't allow a therapist to treat links between abuse and these kinds of LGBTQ feelings, you leave someone in trauma that's untreated.
Boy, that is such
That leads to, guess what? Mental health problems.
There it is. And you can read more at thepublicdiscourse.com. Dr. Laura Haynes. Laura, thank you so much for your work. It was wonderful to have you here, and I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for the opportunity, Janet.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Dr. Laura Haynes. We'll be right back on Janet Mefford Today. This Janet Mefford Today podcast is sponsored by Heart for Lebanon, the Christian ministry working among 2 million Syrian refugee families who've been displaced. For just $29 a month, you can help Heart for Lebanon reach out in Jesus' name to a family of six, providing them with food, Christian education, survival essentials, and the gospel. Please call now, 888-247-5499. That's 888-247-5499 or janetmefford.com. We are back on Janet Mefford Today. I want to talk a little bit about Ben Carson. The Secretary of Housing and Urban Development is under fire for his comments about transgender people, comments that outraged some staffers at the HUD office in San Francisco. What was the terrible thing that he said? Well, according to the Washington Post via the Washington Examiner, Carson warned about big, hairy men posing as women to get into battered women's shelters. The remarks made several of the 50 present HUD staffers visibly upset and led one woman to walk out of the meeting, though an official who spoke to The Washington Post clarified that Carson was not trying to single out transgender women with his comments. Good grief, have we lost our minds? He's trying to make a point, a really good point. And when you want to talk about people who might be upset and want to walk out of a place, talk to the women who are forced to be with men in shelters. A lot of these women having gone through domestic abuse situations, wanting to be with other women and where they can let their guard down and they can feel safe. They're not going to feel like there's any threat to them whatsoever with a man around in an intimate situation. Where are the feminists when you need them? So, for some reason, Ben Carson, who, by the way, happens to be a highly trained, highly experienced and highly regarded brain surgeon, he knows something of biology, he knows something of medical reality. I would think that his particular take on this would matter more than the average bear's. So why can't you just take the comment as it is? Who does want a big hairy man in a woman's shelter? Why can't you say that? What was offensive about this? The big or the hairy? I mean, what? I don't understand. I don't understand, other than he's just not bowing down to the trans, I don't know, the trans activists of the world. I love people who just say the truth, honestly. You know, it's just silly. He was on with Tucker Carlson, by the way, reacting to all of this. Listen to cut one.
I simply pointed out the fact that, you know, we have to have policies that take into consideration everybody's rights. I say everybody has equal rights. Nobody gets extra rights. If you have a women's shelter and you've been operating well, and you get to decide how you're going to run that. The federal government doesn't need to be telling people who is a man or who is a woman. That's a decision that they can make by themselves.
Okay, what's wrong with that? Yeah, the women's shelters ought to be able to decide for themselves how they're going to set policy. But again, what's happened here is everybody is so intimidated. Everybody is so scared. Nobody wants to cross big gay. Nobody wants to cross the activists because they will destroy you. Look, the more you stay silent on common sense, the more ground they're going to take. That's just the reality. They want to take as much ground as possible with their radical ideology. We've seen the effects of this radical ideology. And people like Ben Carson, actually, I appreciate him standing up for himself. We should have equal rights across the board, but not everything is equal. Like marriage, but I won't go down that rabbit trail. That's pretty obvious as it is. So this helps me segue into the next portion, which is this LGBTQ forum that took place in Iowa. This was sponsored by GLAAD and The Advocate, which is an LGBTQ media outlet, and the Cedar Rapids Gazette. Now, side comment here. Did you know there actually are going to be two LGBTQ presidential forums? Why do you need... I know, because it's a political movement, but think about this for a moment. Why do you need two presidential forums, much less one presidential forum, focused on aberrant sexuality? I mean, are they going to have some kind of other sexually based presidential forum? Would that be okay? No. There's only one particular activist group, an activist movement that matters to these presidential candidates. Democrats, by the way, since, of course, they're going to be going up against President Trump. But I got to play some of this because here you heard Ben Carson talking sense on the issue of the federal government not needing to be telling people who is a man and who is a woman. But he's coming at it from the standpoint of, we're not going to force women's shelters to take men who think they're women who have mental illness. That's basically the gist of what he's trying to say. Well, let's go to some of the audio from GLAAD's LGBTQ forum in Iowa. I want to play this first cut. This is Joe Biden. Now, according to Vox, Joe Biden was one of the big losers of the night for various reasons. But you got to listen to this question and then his really weird answer. Listen to cut two.
So in 1994, you supported legislation that increased incarceration rates and promoted more aggressive policing policies and tactics. And laws like this disproportionately affect LGBTQ people of color. So I want to know, how do you assure the American public that you won't once again support increased incarceration? And as president, will you support legislation prohibiting enforcement from targeting LGBTQ people?
Yes, I absolutely will. But let's get something straight. You're wrong about the act. That act was overwhelmingly supported by the African-American community, overwhelmingly supported by the community at large. Everyone from Ted Kennedy on voted for it. It did not have mandatories in it. That's not what it was about. But the truth of the matter is, LGBTQ people are more likely to be arrested, in large part because they find themselves in circumstances where they're on the street. Because they get thrown out of their homes, they don't have access to housing, they don't have access to all the benefits that everyone else does. And they find themselves the victims, victimized by what is happening when they're alone on the street, so many of them. And so, yes, and by the way, in prison, the determination should be that your sexual identity is defined by what you say it is, not what, in fact, the prison says it is. And in that case, you should be entitled also to OGBYN. Anyway, you didn't ask that question, but you're not likely to either, I guess.
Oh, my goodness. Where do I even begin? Well, let's go from the end and work our way backward. He said your gender identity in prison ought to be what you say it is, not what the prison tells you it is. Well, that's kind of weird because Ben Carson got a hard time for saying the federal government shouldn't be telling shelters what's going on with whether or not, you know, they have to take transgenders into women's shelters. Here's Biden saying you can just pick your gender identity in the prison. Well, then why should you have male and female prisons at all? Just have one big populace and that, you know, gender neutral prisons that will go over very, very well, I'm sure. And then talks about the fact that he believes that transgender men, actually, they always do it opposite, but men who think they're women should be entitled to OBGYN care. He actually said it wrong. But really, Joe Biden, really, Mr. Vice President, really, men, why would men need female care? May I ask? I was asking this on social media over the weekend. Why would men need female care? They don't have cervixes. They don't have wombs. They don't have female parts. I don't even want to talk about what the surgical procedures would be to even try to duplicate that kind of stuff. But inside, last I checked, when they're doing these grotesque body mutilation surgeries, they're not forming cervixes and inserting them into some of these men, are they? Not that I've heard. Who knows these days? Things are advancing so quickly in the insane direction that maybe somebody does have a transferred cervix and a transferred womb from a woman, and isn't this groundbreaking? I mean, no, it's the stuff of Dr. Frankenstein, actually. That's what it's really all about. It's the stuff of Dr. Frankenstein. And you have the former vice president of the United States signing on to this nonsense. He needs a mental health exam if he thinks that men need female care. We're nuts, absolutely crazy for going down this road. Where is this going to end? You're going to play this fictitious game of I'm going to pretend men are women and let's go along with it because maybe I'll be able to stay ahead of Elizabeth Warren in the polls. Maybe I'll be able to pull this thing out despite all my horrible gaffes that I utter every time I go out into public. I really, 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 really want to be president. So yeah, whatever you guys are into, I'm totally into. By the way, before he made that insane remark, as you know, he was referring to the fact that LGBTQ people are more likely to be arrested. What are the stats on that, Joe Biden? Because they don't have enough access to housing. There are so many of them on the streets. Where is the proof for that? And by the way, last I checked, the Human Rights Campaign is drowning in money. The biggest homosexual lobby group in the United States. They are drowning in money. Why doesn't somebody turn around and say, hey, HRC, if you're so concerned about this terrible epidemic of tons of gay people living on the streets, and it's an epidemic of problem, you know, we have never had a problem like this before, and it's just a crisis, hand over a few mil. Hand over 10, 20, 30, 40 million. Why don't you create a gay center in every single town where all these homeless gay people who are more likely to be arrested than straight people can live? I mean, sorry, but absent any statistics, it's just one big fantasy land going on here. We're going to come back. You're listening to Janet Mefford Today. Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to your health care? As a Christian, are you looking for health care that doesn't violate your morals and convictions? Well, we're happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is a community of like-minded Christians who work together to pay for their medical costs. It allows you to decide how, when, and where you will access health care so you can make the best choice for you and your family. Starting at $199 a month for a single, up to $529 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all the kids. This is how healthcare should be. For more information, call 855-585-4237 or visit lightyourliberty.com. That's lightyourliberty.com and regain control over your healthcare costs. 855-585-4237 or lightyourliberty.com. Together, we're changing healthcare for good.
When I heard her heartbeat, I decided to keep her. And now my daughter's about to be 3. I don't know where my life would be without her.
The Ministry of Preborn invites you to share your pro-life message through Sharing Heartbeats. You see, when a young woman considering abortion sees her baby on ultrasound and hears the heartbeat, 8 out of 10 times, she'll choose life for her preborn baby.
That ultrasound changed everything for me. It really did. That made it all worthwhile to know that I was going to have a little blessing. And when she got here, it was just, oh my gosh.
Preborn is the largest provider of free ultrasounds in the country. Would you join with Preborn and Janet Mefford today? For $140, you can sponsor 5 ultrasounds and help save 5 babies' lives. All gifts are tax deductible, and 100% of your donation goes toward saving babies' lives. Call now, 855-402-2229, 855-402-BABY. That's 855-402-BABY, or there's a banner to click at janetmefford.com. We are back on Janet Mefford Today. Thank you for joining us. And I'm giving you some of the lowlights of the LGBTQ forum that was held just recently in Iowa. There will be 2 of them, by the way. The second one is going to be a CNN, I think it's a Human Rights Campaign event held on October 10th. So more fun coming, kids. And it's very hard because who really wants to sit down and watch this whole thing? But I watched a good amount of it. And let me just tell you something very quickly before I get back into more of these audio cuts. Cory Booker, this was the moment that really stood out to me. Senator Cory Booker comes out on stage and the male moderator who has just introduced him, he sees Cory Booker and Cory Booker comes running over to him, grabs the male moderator in a bear hug and lifts him off the ground. And the guy gets down and they're kind of giggling and making light of it. And it's all really funny and it's all really lighthearted and wonderful. And yet, what does the guy say, this male moderator? He says, a man picked me up on national television. That's a first. And then he goes on to say, and he's flirting. This is now what is passing for an American presidential forum. Lord help us, honestly. Well, let me get back to Joe Biden. Joe Biden, the former VP, so far, I think, still the front runner, although Elizabeth Warren is gaining. I think she's up in Iowa at this juncture. But anyway, he had that insane remark about he thinks that you should be able to define your own gender identity in prison. Yeah, who could see that going awry? And you should be entitled to OBGYN care. Because as a man who thinks he's a woman, you have all kinds of female problems, I'm sure. Listen to the next question and how the audience reacts when current Vice President Mike Pence's name comes up. This is Cut 3.
In 1994, you did vote for Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And in 1996, you voted for the Defense of Marriage Act. You did vote to repeal both of those, but you have also praised Vice President Mike Pence as a decent guy.
You're a lovely person.
Just asking the questions that people want to know. Well, I guess it goes without saying Pence is opposed to LGBTQ rights. So the question that arises from these is, how can LGBTQ people trust that you won't compromise on issues that put them at risk in order to reach across the aisle to people like Pence?
Okay, that question is weird. First of all, did you like the booing? That was really classy, wasn't it? You called Mike Pence a decent guy. Boo, boo. How do we know you're going to be able to make sure that LGBTQ people are not at risk? At risk of what? At risk of what? You people have more political power as a lobbying group than anybody in America. I can't think of any lobbying group in America that has more power, that can walk into a room and get everybody to bow down more than this activist movement. Are you kidding me? We're at risk. At risk of what? Well, they don't say. They're just at risk. Ellipses. And we're at risk, dot, dot, dot. And here's Biden's response. Cut four.
Because the fact of the matter is, you may recall, I'm the first person nationally to come out and say in front of everyone that I didn't have to go through any period of adjustment. I came out on Meet the Press in support of gay marriage before anybody else did nationally that was on the scheme, number one. And the reason I did is I didn't have to evolve. I had a father who I remember was dropping me off when I was a senior in high school to get an application for a job at the city hall to be a lifeguard. And I saw two men in our town square dressed in their suits kiss one another and go in different directions. And I turned and looked at my dad. And he said very simply, he said, Joey, it's simple. They love each other, period. That's the only question. The only question. And I have been a strong, strong advocate.
Sure, Joe. I mean, color me skeptical. Really? Was Corn Pop there at the time? Really? When you were a teenager, how long ago was that? And your father was really, you know, schooling you on same-sex love back then. Was it, Joe? Really? Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think so. Prove it, Joe. Prove it, Joe. We know about the plagiarism past. We know about some of your previous claims. So, yeah, I'm not buying it. Cory Booker, though. Let's go back to Cory Booker. Cory Booker had this exchange talking about scrapping laws that criminalize the transmission of HIV and AIDS. This is quite interesting. This is Cut 5.
In 2014, Iowa was the first state to modernize its law on transmission of communicable diseases, getting rid of an outdated policy that criminalizes non-disclosure of an individual's HIV status. Unfortunately, many states still have these laws on the books, which can lead to the draconian prison sentences for those accused of non-disclosure. These laws have no scientific basis, discourage testing, and disproportionately impact LGBT people of color, a group that you've spoken a lot about today. As president, how would you handle this on the national stage through your policies and discussions around HIV and AIDS? And would you be willing to get rid of this idea within law?
Yes, absolutely. And so, number one, we have to do things to prevent discrimination, but we still have a lot of work to do with the over a million people in America with HIV and AIDS.
There's Cory Booker. He wants to get rid of laws that would make it a crime to not disclose to your partner that you have HIV and or AIDS. That's what they want. This is where the left is going. No, Iowa has already done away with that law, and everybody else, according to these Democrats, needs to do away with their laws as well. It's not going to be a crime to give somebody exposure to a deadly disease because it's a disease that is, for reasons we all understand, very associated with the LGBT issue. So you got to decriminalize it. So decriminalize that stuff and make sure that it's, you know, this entire behavior is pushed as moral and transgenderism is pushed as good and decent. And the federal government has to enforce it and has to come up with all these draconian laws to make sure that it's forced on the general population. How long until Americans just push back and say we've had enough of this stuff? There's Cory Booker. You can vote for Cory Booker if you're all for scrapping laws criminalizing HIV and AIDS transmission. One more cut I want to play, though, is from Elizabeth Warren. Elizabeth Warren was asked about somebody who was in the forum with a sign about morals and, you know, morality matters, something to that effect. And she was asked the question, How would you define what it means to be moral? Oh, you will love this one. Here's cut six.
They've all been divided. The goats are over here. Sheep are over here. The sheep have a question for the shepherd. And the question is, why us? We look like them. What makes us different that we make it and they don't? And the answer from the shepherd is, I was hungry and he fed me. I was naked and he clothed me, thirsty and he gave me drink. I was in prison and he visited me. And the sheep say, but we never saw you. We never saw you, shepherd or Lord. We never saw you. So how did that happen? And the answer is, inasmuch as ye have done it unto one of these, the least of thy brethren, ye have done it unto me. And what that passage means to me is two very important things. The first one, there is God, or goodness, or power, what word you use, in every single human being, every one of us. And part two is that we are not called on simply to have a good heart. We're not called on to smile, to have an open mind, all good, but not enough to separate the sheep from the goats. We are called on to act.
I think what I need to do is have a Matthew 25 refutation. And every time a progressive candidate takes Matthew 25 and that section on the judgment out of context and twists it beyond recognition, I'll just play my preconceived answer, my pre-recorded answer. Because how many times have I talked about this? Progressive politicians only know one passage and maybe the Sermon on the Mount. It's always Matthew 25. It's always taken out of context. I mean, the whole thing, you're sitting in front of an LGBTQ forum audience and you're talking about morality and you say the way that you are to be moral is you need to act on feeding the poor. Isn't there some other subject you might want to talk about regarding morality? No. That's hate speech. You don't want to talk about anything else that's like the elephant in the room. You don't want to talk about sexuality, what's right and wrong, because that would offend people. You don't want to offend people. This is America. You know, we have some brave, bold, new morality in America, and you better get on board, baby, because otherwise you might not get elected by a bunch of radicals. And you gotta go to the radicals. Again, verse 31 of Matthew 25, this is preceding the parable of the sheep and the goats. But when the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, then he will sit on his glorious throne. All the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate them from one another as the shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. And he will put the sheep on his right and the goats on his left. What is it talking about? He's separating them as the shepherd separates sheep and goats. The Son of Man is doing it. That's Jesus Christ. At the judgment, he will separate the Christians from the non-Christians. And you don't enter heaven because you acted and you did lots of good things feeding the poor. Those are the natural good works that are produced from true faith in Jesus Christ. That is what is distinguishing the sheep from the goats. Their faith in the Lord Jesus Christ. That's the point of the passage. It's not a social justice passage that says God is in all of us. No. We are created in the image of God, but the Holy Spirit only indwells believers. There you go. There's your Bible lesson for today. Hey, thanks everybody for being with us. God bless you. We'll see you next time on Janet Mefford Today.